Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You know, we were chatting just briefly about the course I've been teaching this summer and had a bigger student load than I normally did. So I was pretty offline for most of the summer. Yet, I was having such a good time. I had 15 different students that we set up office hours, and good number of them would show up, every one of them. And, you know, after the first one, I guess it's some of the facilitation training that is rubbed off on me from you, it started to be a discussion more, people talking to each other. And what about your experience? Because there were some students that were just students. They had moved right into their master's program right out of undergrad and had limited experience in the workforce. And others were full-time employed and coming back to get their degree in different industries, different experience, and so on. So you know, it's going well when the group talks to each other, not just one-to-one to the instructor.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. So it was, but one of the topics that I knew I wanted to mention to you was, you know how we struggled with the communication skills and listening and reading and writing and
I think we spent a lot of time on those chapters in our book.
We did. And we put we kind of realized pretty quickly that to do an interview, to do the gap assessment, to participate in meetings, and all of those pieces of it were all part and parcel to the fundamental thing is that we need to influence the team to design a good product, is bring our expertise and knowledge and information to people is just not enough for it to take hold and make a difference, is that it has to be presented well. It has to be conveyed well so that it's not only understood, but acted on. You know, we might not always agree with the end decision, yet they had sufficient information to make a balanced, rational decision that it included considering reliability. And so part of the course and part of the book is that emphasis that in order to influence people, you have to communicate well. And the last couple in the book, it's the last couple chapters. And so many of the students got to that later in the course. And although some of them picked up on it right away, yet the group discussions ended up being only on communication skills. And what do I do with this circumstance? Or how do I approach this area? Or what if I have a group that's dispersed in different cultures? And they were starting to ask some pretty interesting questions that was like, yeah, those are good things to think about. You know, I don't have the answers for all this stuff.
I was very encouraged and it piqued my interest when you were describing the story of the people knocking on your door at office hours and wanting to talk about soft skills. Mm-hmm. That's such a positive reaction to our training. The reliability training can focus on the technical aspects, and many people are very comfortable with that. Engineers tend to be more cerebral and focused on how you do things and methodologies and that type of thing. And not as comfortable and interested in the softer skills. And yet, I think when people do training, they realize that they have to have both. You cannot survive well as a reliability engineer merely mastering the technical skills.
I agree. And a good handful of students recognize that even in undergrad courses, you need to know how to write, or you need to be able to present, or you need to do this. And some will have projects where you have to present your results and stuff like that. Yet it's never talked about or taught or even given them feedback on, well, how do you present well? It's even things like don't make a chart with microprint on it, you know, or a graph. and clutter it all up and do all these other things. And it's just, and some of that we talked about in one of the sessions was that, well, look at the person that's doing the training. Is there academics teaching hard sciences and engineering? And they're surrounded by just bad communication techniques. Their lifeblood is writing technical papers, you know, kind of things, you know, obtuse books so that they can sell copies for their course. So they all kind of laughed at that and says, yeah, you're right. They're kind of talking the way they have surrounding them are other people that are not good communicators. So they don't have a good role model to build on. And there are exceptions. There definitely are.
There are exceptions of people that are naturally that way, and or they've built those skills outside of the classroom, so to speak. Yep. But it really holds someone back. You don't reach your potential.
Yep.
You can't if you don't have the softer skills to supplement your technical.
Yeah, and it's you and I recognized it intuitively, I think, a long time ago. I had the benefit of lots of training. I think you had a bunch of training on consulting, and it included the soft skill type stuff. But we got lucky that way and had organizations that reinforced that we needed to have those skills. One of the students had his daughter, and it was shortly after they did a daughter to work event at where he works. And so she was asking people, he told her, you know, ask whatever you want. And so she asked, what did you wish you knew once you got into work before you got, you know, what did you need to know before you got where you are now, kind of thing. And mm-hmm. she said, and she was on the Zoom call with us. She said, the number one thing I heard over and over again is I wish I knew better communication skills. And I think she used a different term for it, but it was that you see, you mean like reading and writing and presenting? And he goes, yes, exactly.
Let's set this up. Because I think you've made the case, and I completely agree, and your students make the case.
Mm-hmm.
This is so important. And so I'm just thinking of listeners, you know, listening, go, yep, okay, we agree. It's important. Now, what do we do? And so I was thinking about that while you were talking there. And I'd like to understand a little better or think about what the principle is. Why do you need soft skills? So let's say you have a really good approach. You've been trained. You know how to do Taguchi methods or whatever it is. And the rest of the organization does not. Now, you can go in and teach them, but they may not be ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, the principle is you need to convey what's in your mind to others in a way that's acceptable. And by acceptable, I mean they accept what you're saying.
Well, they understand it, or they get the idea of what you're trying to. I learned this early on. Is we were doing this big engineering review session. There was, I don't know, 10 or 15 us engineers, and the senior staff was going to come by into a conference room that had no projector or whiteboards type stuff. It just had a big table in the middle of the room. And I don't know, I was third or fourth on the docket to present, and I'm talking about a project we did, and we use statistical process control to make a difference in the design of one of our tools. And I was like, how am I going to present this? So I went to a printer and had this, you know, 4 foot wide printer print out the control chart that showed, you know, it was 15 failures per 1,000 feet prior to the change, and after the change, it went to 2 failures per 1,000 feet. And so it was bouncing around and then just plummeted and went down. So I did that, and I printed it the length of the table. So it was my turn to present, and it was set up perfectly. The first three talked about the formulas, the equations, the science behind it, the details, you know, all their test equipment, and all the other stuff. And basically ran out of time before they said why whatever they're doing was useful or what difference did it make. And I said, no, the only important thing is to talk about the result. This is senior staff. They care about the money. And so I rolled out this great big sheet of paper that everybody could see, because there's 10, 15 people in the audience, plus the other 10, 15 engineers standing around the table. And everybody else is using 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper trying to explain it. You know, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to just roll it out. And I didn't have to say anything. What made that change? You know, why did that change? Why did that graph change so suddenly?
Yeah.
And I explained it and I said, and here's the numbers. Here's how much money we were scrapping prior, and here's how much we're scrapping now. Here's the delta per reel that we make. We save this much money. And I was done in 5 minutes. And then they said, well, how did you get to this picture? And then they got into the technical stuff, but it was all prompted by them, because the graphic told the story all by itself.
Beautiful, beautiful. In this, I was thinking of three things that come to mind here, and you've hit on one of them. Like I'm trying to understand what can we say in a podcast that would help people on this subject? And one of the things that you've just described, I will call it the message. The message was embodied in that illustration or chart.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really think it's worthwhile for people to fine-tune what the message is. It can't be a long message. It can't be a multiple, you know, a combination.
Five steps to get to the deal. It's, you get 30 seconds, and you've heard it before. We've all heard this advice is, you know, the executive summary, the get to the point up top, you know. So if you had one sentence to tell somebody, what do you want them to walk away with understanding? What one short sentence do you want them to understand?
It took me a long time, Fred, to get that across in my mind. I mean, I was stubborn on this because I thought people need to know everything. And so I'd go into the meetings and just start talking about everything.
Yeah.
And then I would get advice in the one-on-one with my boss that, no, you need to hone your message to, you know, one piece of paper, one thing, one sentence. And I'm thinking to myself, that just doesn't seem right. At first, I was thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
I had to overcome my natural tendency to cover too much.
Well, I learned it as a consultant. You get 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And if they're not asking more questions, you missed. You're not going to get that project.
Yes. The second thing that I learned this, all of these I learned by mistakes. The second thing is personal passion.
Mm-hmm.
And because I practiced my message and I went in front of management early in my career and it sort of went over blah. And then I thought about it, read some books. And if you look at my library, you'll see a lot of books on soft skills.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's stuff out there you can study. And I read something about, you know, what interests you. And so the next time I went in front of the management, before I did that, I thought to myself, what is it about this that I care about?
Mm-hmm.
Gets me up in the morning that I really feel is so important. And I pulled those things out. It had to do with reliability, the consequence of failure to customers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And just that vision of a product failing, and then it gets my passions going. You don't want that to happen. And so I got to this message and I characterized it with that passion. I let the passion come out. The response was really good.
It makes a huge difference. It does. There's a lot of stuff out there that talks about, you know, the issue we had in writing the book is that every chapter has, 20 or 30 references that said, here's other stuff to go read and stuff, because we can't, this would be a whole nother book just on active listening or just on writing skills or presenting skills or whatever. There's lots of material out there. The fundamentals are keep it clean, keep it simple, to get to the point first. Those are all important. There's no doubt about it. And there's plenty of stuff out there to be aware of it. But one of the things I found my students interested in is, you know, we've heard all those things, but we don't do it. He says, you need feedback. You need, there was, I'm drawing a blank on the guy's name. he did the, it was a book about how do you become an expert in something. It was like, and then he got accused of, it's not as simple as spending 10,000 hours playing a piano. It, and he, in the book and in talks he did later, I'm drawing a complete blank on his name, he talked about it's not 10,000 hours of practice, it's 10,000 hours with a coach, with feedback, with somebody giving you input back. And so we spend a lot of time in these one-to-ones or in these office hours talking about pick something, gestures while you're presenting, or does your presentation have a story that hooks your audience and gets them interested in it? And then you can get into the details. What's the main point? Those kinds of things. But have somebody, a friend of yours, a colleague, somebody you trust, prep to say, hey, watch my gestures and how does the audience respond? And then get that feedback afterwards. It's not enough just to practice on your own. You need feedback. It's really hard to do it on your own.
Well, I'm going to advocate for both. And I agree with you completely. Requesting feedback takes a certain amount of humility.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to bring up another point here to supplement that, which is I believe in preparation, but that's only by lessons learned. I didn't believe in preparation to begin with. And the reason I didn't is my ego. My ego told me, I know this stuff. You know, I'm going to teach a class on whatever, or I'm going to go in front of the management, or I'm going to go in whatever. And my ego was telling me, hey, I got this. I can do this. And that doesn't work as well as good preparation. And I would actually go, if I'm going to talk to management or even talk to a small group of people, communicate something, I'll just in the privacy of my office with the door shut, I will practice it and do it as if it's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
Just get it into my muscle memory, because something always would come up that would throw me off in the meetings. It's like life happens, chaos happens, and then you lose your train of thought. But if you've practiced, like this is so true in sports, it's true in anything that you want to practice. But that takes it for me, it took setting aside my ego.
It takes discipline to do it.
You want to get feedback from people afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the practice is great. If I think for me anyway, and I'm sure it's different for anybody that's listening to this, is if you can practice in somebody that can give you, stand in as the audience and act like an audience and give you feedback in the practice sessions. And, you know, when you and I practiced for our tutorials, it was working on timing. What are the trade-off hand signals that we're giving each other? We did a bunch of the mechanics part of it, and we kind of got the flow, and does this make sense? And we looked at it a whole slew of different levels. Yet it's not verbatim. One of the students brought up is, why do people over rehearse and they have their 3x5 cards and they basically have a script, and they're not a voice actor? It's obvious they're just reciting a script.
That's overdone.
Yeah, the analogy is watching the Olympics where skiers, you know, they're going down the course, slalom course or something like that. You'll see them at the starting gate before it's their shot to go down the hill, visualizing the entire course, and they're weaving and ducking and doing the motions that they are seeing as they visualize the process. And it's the same if you're going into a meeting or a presentation, is, you know, who's standing, who's not, where do people typically sit, what's the stage like, what's the podium like, how are you going to move to take questions, where are you going to be when you're presenting, how are you going to gesture and stuff like that. Those things all give you that muscle memory you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's not a script in a play that you have to read verbatim.
Absolutely. Let me build on that a little bit. I think you have to be natural. We have to talk with people, talk with people, not just to them.
Not at them.
And this is, if you're in person, that means you're not talking to some script in your head. You know, you're not reading something, you're memorizing something. You're actually looking at them and caring that they're receiving your message and seeing if they do, asking questions, not just telling, but asking what their opinion is. In other words, making sure it's a back and forth, not just a one-way street. And then the other thing I'll mention is when I had to shift to online during COVID, I set up the gallery. I had everybody's videos on all the time. If it's a small group, if it's a meeting, whatever it is, videos on. That was so unnatural with people, but I wanted to see people. And I set up the gallery of the people, and so I could talk to them.
Right.
Even though it's on my screen, I'm actually believing that I'm talking to them, not just reading a script or something like that. And that helped a lot in terms of the online presence.
We're touching on primarily presentations, yet that's just one piece. And we could spend all day talking about presentations and techniques and how do you build a good presentation and all. Just there's tons of stuff in it. And that tended to overwhelm the students. They got through these chapters and they're like, the best question by far, and I think you'd appreciate it, Carl, is that why is listening the first one in the chapter?
Yeah.
Right. Well, let me put it this way. You're not going to get anywhere if you're not listening.
Exactly. And people have things to say. And plus, you need to know your audience. And that can be in real time.
Yep.
So you can be working with someone, and if you listen to them, you actually get to know them. Then you can modify your approach a little
bit. What's important to them? What's the motivations for them? All these pieces you can pick up by listening. And if you ignore it at your peril, you're going to be talking to a wall because they've turned you off. You're not listening to them. And that's just scratching the surface on all these things. I think the idea is practice and the bring your passion out, get to the point right off the bat is great when you're trying to convey a message. It's, I think we have to circle back though. It's also very, very important to understand. And even when you're presenting or talking or trying to do a proposal, whatever, you still need to listen. You still really, really need to pay attention to the people you're talking to.
I can't tell you how many times I've been in front of a group and I think I've got the message, I've practiced and everything like that. And I look at the body language. Yeah, I see frowns or I see, you know, a little tiny shake of the head.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to stop and just open it up for discussion. What are your thoughts? And then bring it out so that then you can modify your message and respond. You have to be able to do that. And if you don't listen, you'll never get there. I also wanted to, part of what we're talking about is questioning. So you listen, and part of listening is asking questions.
Anticipating and listening to the response.
Yeah. Yes. So all we've really done is touched a very thin layer on a lot of different areas on the soft skills. Each one of these, meetings, writing, facilitating, change management, all the different things that are in our book, each one of these can be much deeper understood. I would encourage people to self-study. There are some really good books and YouTubes and things like that on communication skills and influencing people and things, and just broadening out and spending a little bit of time each week enhancing. There's no limit to how good you can be on soft skills.
Yeah, I know you and I have been at this for decades and we're still learning and practicing. It's just not, it never ends. And that, I think that's another key attribute of it. We didn't put in the book is just be curious and learn how to improve. There's all kinds of advantages and benefits to that. That the book, The Process of Reliability Engineering, the last two chapters have a short description of a bunch of things to do, things to be aware of, lots and lots of references that get you started. And yet, as you dive into it, and if you have any questions, let's extend office hours to you. It's like, what's on your mind? What issues are you having? What do you want to get better at? Let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can leave us a voice message and join the podcast discussion with your voice, or leave us a message there, or as Carl and I and the other hosts are, we're all available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So plenty of ways to get your message over to us. And we'd be glad to give some pointers or give you, set you in the right direction or give you some assistance. But the more importantly, I'm really interested in where do you see communication skills in your career? And what do you need to know to be successful? And if, can we help through this podcast? That'd be great.
Absolutely. And the very often, Fred and I have taken a listener question and responded. I've done this many times, responded. Oh, yeah. Here's my response, but listen to the podcast that's coming up because we're going to make this a centerpiece of a podcast. And that expands on the answer.
Oh, man. I don't know how many times I had to, after you and I talk, I go, I got to update my message back to them in case they missed the podcast.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's a great discussion. I loved it.
Yeah, thanks, Carl. And yeah, thanks to my students for, you know, bringing it out in the course and really focusing on it for a good part of it too. So that was encouraging, is that I think we did the right thing adding in the parts on communication skills.
Very good. See you later, Fred.
Talk to you later, Carl.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.